Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Yep, he's done it again, folks.
Oh, no, not again. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the third year in a row.
It's not the first time. It won't be the last.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. Dr. William Dunkelberg is our guest. Bill is an old friend of ours, a longtime member of our Brain Trust, and chief economist for the National Federation of Independent Business, as well as professor of economics at Temple University. Dr. William Dunkelberg once a month polls small business owners from across the country to get them to tell him what are they seeing out there. What's the economy looking like? What is their experience with the economy? And he accumulates that information and compiles it into an outstanding report, and he gives it to us, shares it with us every month, and he's going to do that right now. Bill, welcome back to the show.
Always a pleasure.
It's good to have you back. We're starting to hear a little bit of concern about the economy, Bill. What are your folks saying?
Well, the optimism index in May did slip a little bit from the one that we saw in April, which was a pretty good number. What it said was a message kind of like we had in March, which was, gee, the month was really good. The percent of firms with higher sales went up and profits went up and so on. But looking forward, there are very few that, or many fewer, felt that the economy is going to be better 6 months from now than it was today. But then again, that's no surprise. The first quarter was a 5% plus growth quarter, which is way above trend. And
especially for our first quarter, wasn't it?
Right. So, you know, so they were telling us they had a great first quarter with profits and sales and all those kinds of things. And then of course, if you ask them, well, 6 months from now, can business conditions be better? They said, well, no, it can't get any better. In fact, you know, 10 percentage points more said it had to be worse than it is today. And that really makes sense. So, about 40% of the decline in the index was really just that one question. The other two changes in the index were that kind of brought the index down was a decline from stratospheric levels in the percent of owners who said they have at least one job opening they can't fill. So it went from stratospherically high to historically very high, 31% down to 25. Still, one in four have a job opening, at least one opening that they can't fill. So, you know, that was really an expected change. We didn't expect it to stay way up there at 31. But the capital spending plans did weaken by 5 points. They fell from 33% planning outlays to 28, and that is a little low. So, mm-hmm. You know, what you see is, I guess, slowing, but, you know, that's what you should see from a first quarter like the one we had.
Well, yeah, and see, that's what irritates me about the news media. The other guys, you know, not me, everybody else, Bill, who when they see things like that, you know, the headline becomes economy is slowing. Well, yeah, 5.8% growth in the first quarter to 4.2% growth in the second quarter or whatever it's going to be. Okay, technically you're right, it's slowing, but it's like, as I've said before, it's like saying, you know, we've descended from 200 miles an hour to 150 miles an hour. Well, we're still going pretty fast.
Right, and it would be not good for the economy if we had more quarters like the first quarter. That's just too good.
Well, and the thing that happens, though, is, Bill, and you're the economist in this group. Tell us what you think it does to the average consumer out there. When they see those headlines, that the headlines, all the headlines says is economy is weakening. Well, yeah, from 5.8 to 4.2, that is a weakening. But what do you think that does to the overall confidence of the consumer and small business owners?
Well, you know, it makes you think twice about pulling the trigger on hiring or the capital spending numbers that we looked at where we lost 5 points there. And so it creates more uncertainty about the future, and then uncertainty translates into lower spending on on everything, on inventory accumulation and so on, and that's means the economy does slow.
But those kinds of headlines sell newspapers.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of thing that it becomes a Fox News alert. Economy slowing, and it becomes one of those kinds of things. All the networks do it, and it's very annoying to me, especially when I have people walk up to me and say things like, boy, this economy is really bad. And I say, well, wait a minute. Why do you say that? Well, I read it in the newspapers, but all they're really doing is reading the headlines.
And part of the problem is a lot of the people who do the writing for these things really are not have really no training. Never took a business course or an economics course.
Right.
So they don't have any. They're not capable of kind of thinking of these things in the right terms, and so they give us these misleading headlines.
But they are predisposed to find the controversy.
Oh, sure.
And if they can find it in that kind of reporting, they do it.
Yep.
22, we're going to be right back with Bill Dunkelberg. We got a lot more to come, a lot more good information that Bill is going to impart upon us right after these messages. Stay with us. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Dr. William Dunkelberg, Chief Economist for the National Federation of Independent Business, among other things. Very busy guy and very many affiliations, and a lot of people are demanding his time, pulling at him, wanting his wisdom, and that's the reason why I am so grateful that over the years he's taken the time out of his busy schedule to share some things with us. And Bill, on behalf of my audience, we thank you.
Well, always a pleasure.
I know, and you always say that, and I know you mean it. And I'm sorry we just missed each other this week. As my audience knows, I broadcast Monday and Tuesday from the NFIB's 2006 Small Business Summit. You were there for the Wednesday events, and we just missed each other. Otherwise, because I guess it was 2 years ago, we actually did this interview face-to-face.
We did, right. We got it done face-to-face.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I was hoping we could have this time, but just didn't work out. But we'll do it again one of these days. We're talking about the economy, folks, and how small business owners are responding to the information, or the questions, I should say, Bill's asking them about the economy. And Bill, as you know, I interviewed a number of the NFIB members Monday and Tuesday, and the thing that kept coming up and keeps coming up, and you alluded to it earlier in the previous segment, and that is the ability to find competent employees.
That seems to be right up there at the top of the list for these guys and gals. The labor markets are tight. If you look at the BLS numbers, we have 63% of the population age 16 and over with a job. That's the highest in history, except for some of the dot-com years, like 2000, we were higher than that. But that was a bizarre period. So let's talk about a normal period. We're at a record high. The unemployment rate is down at 4.6, which most economists think is lower than full employment. So we're very, very tight there. And that bears up in our numbers. We've got very large number planning to add new jobs, and of course the job openings number is high, so they try to hire, they can't hire, so the job openings grow, and they tell us that 85% of the people who are out there trying to hire tell us that they had few or no qualified applicants for the positions that they had. Amazing. So we have a tight labor market out there. And, of course, as you'd expect, they're raising compensation, trying to attract people into the labor force.
Which brings me to a little bit of politics, Bill. And that is this statement. And to me, what you just reported and the facts of what you just reported, the evidence on the ground, the evidence in front of us about the employment situation in the United States and the compensation, et cetera, and yet our Congress is so out of touch with how it really operates, that they're actually debating right now in Congress on both sides of the aisle, not just Democrats, folks. I'm usually after the Democrats for this, but the Republicans apparently seem to be joining the debate on whether to raise minimum wage or not.
Yeah. It's an election year.
What a joke. What a joke. I mean, and what gets me, Bill, is when they say things like this, they don't even realize that it makes them look like a bunch of dummies.
Yeah, and the things that are said in support of the minimum wage are, of course, silly. The one thing you hear, of course, is, well, the minimum wage has been eroded badly, so we have to restore it. Well, the presumption there is that having a minimum wage in the first place is a good idea, and it's not. You don't like the government setting prices or wages. It's not a good idea. Then you hear, well, it'll really help poor people. And my point is, most poor people don't work already. They're on welfare somewhere. So poor, if you're not working, a higher minimum wage not only doesn't help you, but it also makes it harder for you to ever get a job because you can't get hired. So you condemn, you know, unskilled workers to never being able to join the workforce in the first place. That's a really bad idea. And then, of course, the fact is that most minimum wage earners are from above median income families. They're college kids, high school kids, and those are not people that we should be taxing American taxpayers, which is what we do here, we're not trying to support those people. The earned income tax credit is such a much better way to go. But it's political. It sounds great to raise the minimum wage. It's an election year. And the other thing you hear people cite is, well, look at all the states we raise the minimum wage and employment is higher. Duh. Of course it is, because the economy keeps growing, so we hire more people even if they're more expensive. And it's just horrible economics. Well, you just can't support it. They're trying to argue that if you raise the price of labor or any commodity, that people take more. But the law of demand says very clearly, raise the price of anything, people take less, and that includes labor.
Well, and the economy is effectively raising minimum wage because as all the factors that you just indicated, as they become more and more prevalent and evident for employers, that effectively raises minimum wage.
Yeah, well, it is true that every year fewer people are paying the minimum wage because you have a little inflation every year, et cetera. And, of course, in a hot economy, even if, you know, I hire labor because I have more customers, so I have more people. So I hire them. That's why the politicians never raise the minimum wage except in a hot economy, because they know down deep that if you raise the price of labor, it's going to hurt, you know, teen employment. Look at France, which has a really high minimum wage and 23% unemployment rate for young people.
And riots recently.
Yeah, well, young people are always rioting for jobs. They have nothing else to do because they can't get one because the minimum's too high.
Right. Now, that's an excellent point. That speaking of how what our Congress seems to be wanting to do, many of them, not all of them, but many of them, all they got to do is look at what's happened in France in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hold on to that thought, Bill. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk some more about some of these other sectors of the economy, some of the other issues like inventory. But the biggie is inflation. I'm going to ask Bill, is inflation back? Tintail, we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Mm-hmm. You never want to quit. No, no. After you've had it, you're in an awful fix.
We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with Bill Dunkelberg, Dr. William Dunkelberg, Chief Economist for the NFIB, and Professor of Economics, former Dean of the Business School at Temple University, and our good friend. Bill, you've got a website. In addition to NFIB.com, folks, which I always encourage you to check out, you have your own website to where they can find this report.
Right. Well, that's when I put the report that I write, with all of its flaws and little mistakes, put it up immediately so that it's quickly available. And also the charts, which show you the 30-year history on the index and all of its components. So that's at smallbiz.org. That's not B-I-Z. It's smallbus.org.
And you can also find this report on my website. Bill allows us to post it on our website, which we do every month. So check those things out, folks. It'll help you understand how to plan your own, you know, compare these responses to your own information, the own things, the things you're seeing yourself. Bill, what about inflation? As you know, for a long time, inflation was the big ugly guy in the report. And is it back?
Well, you know, it's starting to look like it from our point of view. I mean, what we keep saying is inflation is getting stronger. The BLS seems to disagree with us, especially when they look at the core. We use all of the responses that we get from our members out there to plug them into a model and make a prediction, which is a very, very accurate prediction on the path of inflation. And we have a prediction for the second quarter for the average for the 3 months of 5.1%, and I think it'll be that high anyway, maybe a little higher than that, it looks like. And the core, though, we've got the core running around 4 based on the model. Excuse me, but the government keeps saying it's a little over 2, and I think it all has to do with that housing thing, you know. We have lots of construction firms in our sample, and they tell us they're raising prices, and, in fact, we all know they have been for the last year or so. But that doesn't show up in the Consumer Price Index. What the government does is they collect a sample of houses that they say looks like the ones we own, and then they watch what happens to the rents on those houses. And when the rents go up, then they think there's inflation. And, of course, rents haven't gone up because homeownership's at a record high percentage of the population, which means vacancy rates in the rental units are at record high levels. Rents are depressed. And that's 32% of the CPI is that structure of number. So that's
That was even something Mr. Greenspan was wringing his hands over a couple of years ago, is how he feared that the housing situation was going to affect rents.
Yeah, here's the way they do it. Here's how crazy it is. With interest rates go up and the economy starts slowing, people can't afford mortgages, so they'll go back to renting, and that'll put upward pressure on rents. And as the economy slows and pressure on prices in fact goes down, the rental component will start going up in the CPI.
So boil it all down for us. Is inflation? Are we seeing a relatively temporary spike in inflation, or is it something you feel like is sitting in?
Well, you know, the inflation never just kind of spikes. It crawls up, and once it gets, into the system, why it's hard to get it back out of the system. Bringing it out takes some time. So, it's crawling up there, and we're seeing inflation now, not just the energy component of the CPI, but it's showing up everywhere now. Well, once it's in the system, it's going to be harder to eradicate it. About the only thing that'll get rid of it for us, of course, is a marked slowdown in economic activity, aka recession. Not necessarily recession, but a slowdown anyway. So that because when a lot of people like to talk about pricing power, and all of us small business people know the only time you have quote unquote pricing power is when demand is really strong. The economy is really strong, you can raise prices, and the prices will stick. And your revenues will continue to grow. But if demand is weak, you can't do that. So the economy's hot. We are raising prices. We have good reason to because of all the energy costs and the labor costs and so on. And unless the economy does slow down noticeably, we're going to be stuck with it for a little while.
Well, not only that, but you mentioned fuel prices. We're going to have expensive petroleum for as far as any of us can see, aren't we?
Yeah. Now, expensive is okay as long as it doesn't get more expensive, because inflation is a change in the price level. Well, now we're stuck with $70 oil.
Mm-hmm.
It stays there and doesn't change. That piece of the inflation component of the inflation index will go away.
It can be absorbed.
Now we just have a high price, and we have to live with it. We don't like it. It is a tax.
But it's not going up, at least.
Exactly.
Bill, I got to go for this hour. Thank you for being here very much, as always, and we'll see you next month.
You got a deal.
Bill Dunkelberg, ladies and gentlemen, chief economist for the NFIB and a great American. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'll be back on the other side of the news with Joan Pride.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.